It took the rest of the day to bring out the fearfully mutilated bodies, and the diggers' committee closed the number 6 section again, while modifications were made to reinforce the stagings. The number 6 section was still closed. Zuger had one bottle of Cape brandy left, which he had been saving, but now he fetched it from his locker, pulled the cork with his teeth, and poured into their 2 mugs. He and Jan Schroot drank in moody silence for a while, and then Zuger sighed. "Tell your friend I will meet him," he said. Pale dust chalked the sky above the plain, so that the distances drifted away, dreamlike and insubstantial, to an indefinite horizon. There was no living thing, no bird nor vulture, in the milky blue sky, no ripple of flocks nor smoky drift of springbok herds through the low scrub. In this loneliness, the little cluster of buildings stood forlorn, long deserted, roofs sagging and the adobe plaster falling from the walls in chunks, exposing the unsawn timber frames beneath. Zuger touched the reins and brought the gelding down to a walk, while he slouched in the saddle, riding with long stirrups and the disinterested mien of a man on a long and boring journey. But his eyes, under the brim of the wide hat, were quick and restless. He was uncomfortably aware of the empty rifle scabbard under his right knee. "Unarmed." The invitation had been unequivocal. "You will be watched." The man had chosen an ideal rendezvous. There was no approach to this deserted farmhouse, except across miles of bare felt, no cover higher than a man's knee, and it was good shooting light, with the sun in the west. Zuger shifted his weight restlessly in the saddle, and the big, ungainly Colt revolver under his coat dug into his side, a pain he did not resent, although the comfort it gave him was illusory. A man with a rifle could pick his shot and take his time as Zuger rode in. The sheep kraal was part of the homestead, unplastered stone walls, and there was a well in front of the house, again with a stone coping. Beside the well lay the remains of a wagon, 3 wheels and the Düsselboer missing, the paint dried and cracked away, the weed growing up through the wagon bed. Zuger touched the gelding's neck, and he stopped beside the wagon. He dismounted swiftly, dropping off on the side furthest from the building, using the horse as cover, and while he made a show of adjusting the girth, he studied the empty building again. The windows were dark, empty holes, like missing teeth, and there could be an unseen marksman standing well back in the gloomy interior. The front door was blanched by the sun. Zuger could see the light through the cracks. It banged aimlessly and unrhythmically in the wind, and the wind hooted and moaned in the eaves and through the empty windows. Behind the gelding's body, Zuger loosened the revolver in his belt, making certain that it was ready to hand. He tied the gelding's reins to the wagon body with a slippery knot that would come undone at a tug, and then he consciously steeled himself, drew breath, and squared his shoulders, and stepped out from behind the horse. He began to walk towards the front door, but his right hand was on his hip, under the tail of his jacket, almost touching the checkered grip of the revolver. He reached the doorway, keeping clear of the entrance, and then flattened his back against the wall. With faint surprise, he realized that his breathing was rough, as though he had been running. Then another surprise. He was enjoying his own fear, the feeling of heightened sensitivity of his skin, the enhanced clarity of vision, the singing of the adrenaline in his blood, the nervous tension of his sinew and muscle, the awareness of being alive in the threat of death. He had been too long without this stimulant. He placed one hand on the sill of the window and vaulted through it lightly, dropping to the earthen floor as he landed and rolling swiftly to his feet again in the corner facing the room. It was small and empty. Bunches of dusty cobwebs hung from the rafters, and the floor was scattered with the white-flecked droppings of gecko lizards. Zuger moved down the wall, keeping his back covered, and stepped through it into the second room. The Kegel fireplace was blackened with soot, and the smell of dead ash caught in his throat. He looked through the open doorway into the sunlit sheep kraal beyond, There was a riderless horse tethered in the angle of the wall. A grey, dappled quarters, uncropped dark mane, and full tail almost sweeping the ground. The rifle scabbard on the saddle was empty, and Zuger's nerves fizzed. The unknown rider must have the gun with him. Zuger loosed the long barrel of the Colt revolver in his belt, peering out into the sunlight.
"Keep your hand away from that gun."
The voice came from behind him, from the empty front room through which Zuger had just passed.
"Don't draw it, and don't turn around."
The voice was quiet, controlled, and very close. Zuger obeyed it, standing awkwardly with his right hand under his coat, and he felt the touch of steel between his shoulder blades. It had been well done. The man had been lying outside, had let him walk through the house, and then had come in behind him.
"Now very slowly bring out the gun and put it on the floor between your feet. Very slowly, please, Major Ballantyne. I don't want to have to kill you. But if I hear the hammer cocked, I will. Believe me, I will."
Slowly, Zuger freed the heavy pistol and stooped to place it on the littered kitchen floor. He glanced back between his own legs and saw the man's feet. He was wearing felskun of tanned kudu hide and leather leggings. Big feet, big man, strong legs. Zuger straightened up, holding his hands well away from his body.
"You should not have brought a gun, Major. This is a very distrustful of you and dangerous for both of us."
He could hear the relief in the man's tone, and the voice was familiar. He searched his memory. That strange accent, where had he heard it? The footsteps retreated across the kitchen.
"Now slowly, Major, very, very slowly, you may now turn around."
The man stood in the gloom of the soot-darkened walls, but the shaft of sunlight from the high window fell on his hands and the weapon they held. It was a shotgun. Both big, fancy hammers were at full cock, and the man's fingers were hooked around the triggers.
"You?" said Zuger. "Yes, Major, me."
The pockmarked Griqua bastard smiled at him, white teeth in the darkly handsome face and the gypsy ringlets dangling to his collar.
"Henrik Neumann, at your service once again. If you're buying cattle, it's a hell of a way to do business."
The Griqua was the one who had bought Zuger's bullock team, the money he had used to buy the Devil's Own.
"No, Major, this time I am selling."
And then sharply,
"No, Major, do not move, and keep your hands there where I can see them. I have loaded with big loopers. Lion shot, Major. At this range it'll cut you in half."
Zuger lifted his hands away from his sides.
"What are you selling?" "Wealth, Major. A new way of life for you and for me."
Zuger smiled bleakly, sarcastically.
"I am truly grateful for your kindness, Neumann. Please call me Henrik, Major, if we are to be partners."
"We are?" Zuger inclined his head gravely.
"I'm honored. You see, you have something I need, and I have something you need. Go on. You have two excellent claims. They are truly excellent claims, in all except that they yield very few diamonds."
Zuger felt the scar on his cheek heating up, but he kept his expression neutral.
"And as you know, Major, my ancestry, the touch of the tar brush, I think is the polite term, or more succinctly my Kaffir blood, precludes me from owning claims."
They were silent then, regarding each other wearily across the darkened kitchen. Zuger had abandoned any idea of going for the shotgun. He was starting to become intrigued by the articulate and persuasive voice of the tall Griqua.
"For that reason I cannot sell you my claims,
not even at gunpoint," Zuger said quietly.
"No, no, no, no. No, you don't understand. You have the claims, but no diamonds, while I have no claims, but..."
Hendrik drew a drawstring tobacco bag from his inner pocket and dangled it by its string from his forefinger.
"But I have diamonds."
He finished the sentence and tossed the bag across the room. Instinctively, Zuger reached out one hand and caught it. The bag crunched in his hands like a bag of humbugs, bringing back childhood memories. He held it, staring still at Hendrik Nyman.
"Open it, please, Major."
Slowly, Zuger obeyed, pulling open the mouth of the cloth bag and then peered into it. The light was bad, but in the bag something gleamed like the coils of a sleeping serpent. Zuger felt the diamond thrill close its fist upon his chest. It never failed, he thought. Always that choking feeling when the stones shine. He tipped the bag and spilled a small rush of uncut diamonds into his hand. He counted them quickly. There were 8 of them altogether. One was a canary bright stone, 20 carats, if it was a point. £2,000 worth, Zuger estimated.
These are just samples of my wares, Major. A week's takings.
There was another perfect 8-sided crystal, slick and soapy, silver-grey, bigger than the yellow diamond, at least £3,000 worth. Another of the stones was a symmetrical triangular shape, like those throat lozenges that tasted of licorice. More childhood memories. A clear silver stone, limpid and lovely. Zuger picked it up between thumb and forefinger and held it to the light of the high window.
"These are IDB?" he asked. "Dirty words, Major. They offend my delicate breeding. Do not concern yourself further with where they came from, or how I get them. Just be certain that there will be more, many, many more. Every week there will be a parcel of first water stones."
"Every week?" Zuger asked, and heard the greed in his own voice.
"Every week,"
Hendrik agreed, watching Zuger's expression. And he knew the fly had touched the sticky strands of his web. He let the barrel of the shotgun sag towards the mud floor, and he smiled that flashing, flamboyant smile.
"Every week you will have a parcel like this to seed into your own cradle, to throw out on your own sorting table."
There was another stone in his palm. At first Zuger had thought it to be a black boat, the almost worthless industrial diamond, but his heart bounced suddenly as the poor light caught it, and he saw the deep emerald colour flash from its heart. His fingers trembled slightly as he lifted it.
"Yes, Major," Hendrik Nyman nodded approval. "You have a good eye. That is a green dragon."
A freak stone, a green diamond, a fancy in the parlance of the copy wallopers. There were fancy diamonds the colour of rubies or sapphires or topaz, and fancies commanded whatever the trade would bear. It was not impossible that this green dragon would fetch £10,000 and end up in the crown jewels of an emperor.
"You said partners?" Zuger asked softly. "Yes, partners," Hendrik nodded. "I will find the stones. Let me give you an example. I paid 300 to 1 of my men for that green dragon. You put it across your table and register it from the devil's own."
Zuger was staring at him fixedly, hungrily, his hand still trembling, and Hendrik stepped towards him confidently.
"You should get £4,000 for a stone like that. A profit of 3,700, and we share that 50-50, because I am not a greedy man. Equal partners, Major. 1850 for you and 1850 for me."
Zuger poured the glittering stones into his left hand. His eyes had not left Hendrik Nyman's lips.
"What do you say, Major? Equal partners?"
Hendrik transferred the shotgun to his left hand and reached out with his right.
"Equal partners," he repeated. "Come on, let's shake hands on it."
Slowly, Zuger stretched out his own right hand, fingers open, palm upwards. And then, as their fingers touched, he hurled the handful of diamonds into Hendrik Nyman's face. All Zuger's strength was behind the throw, all his anger at being so sorely tempted, all his outrage at this devilish assault upon his own self-esteem. The diamonds tore into Hendrik Nyman's flesh. One sharp-sided crystal ripped open his smooth olive-skinned forehead above the right eye. Another sliced his lip. Involuntarily, Hendrik threw up his hands, lifting the shotgun muzzle high before his face as he staggered back from this unexpected assault. But at the same instant, his right hand closed over the pistol grip and his forefinger hooked for the triggers. The gun was still at full cock, each barrel loaded with lion shot. Hendrik started to drop the muzzles, pointing for Zuger's belly. Zuger grabbed the barrel 6 inches below the gaping muzzles and forced the gun upwards. Grasping with his left hand for Hendrik's right wrist, the big Griqua jerked backwards with both arms, and Zuger made no effort to resist him. Instead, he lunged forward, thrusting the gun into Hendrik's own face. The blue steel barrels cracked against his cheekbone, and Hendrik gasped at the blow and reeled backwards. Zuger drove at him again, forcing him into the soot-blackened wall so that he grunted with pain, pinned there for a moment with the shotgun pointing at the roof. In these seconds, Zuger reached with his left hand, hooked his thumb through the trigger guard, and jerked back against the triggers. Both barrels fired simultaneously. The burst of gunfire in the tiny, confined kitchen was deafening. The bright orange muzzle flashes lit the gloom like a lightning strike, and the charges of shot crashed through the rotten roof, blowing gaping holes through which the sun shot long, bright shafts of light. The massive recoil of the double-shotted gun drove the butt back into Hendrik's own belly, and he doubled over with a gasp of shock and agony. The gun was now empty, harmless. Zuger let it go and dived full length across the dusty floor. At full stretch, his fingers touched the cool, checkered grip of the ugly black Colt revolver. As he fumbled for it desperately, he heard the light crunch of footsteps across the earthen floor behind him and rolled right, flicking over on his back without raising his head. Hendrik was over him, the empty shotgun raised above his head, with both hands like an executioner's axe, and he had already launched the stroke. The gun swung down in a wide arc, the blue steel glittering sullenly in the gloom, and the hiss of it like the sound of a goose's wing. Zuger rolled again, flipping his body aside, but the butt of the shotgun caught him. It was only a touch, high in the shoulder, but it jerked his head so that his teeth clashed in his skull, and his right arm was instantly nerveless, numb from his shoulder to his fingertips. The Colt revolver went flying from his grip, spinning away across the kitchen floor until it hit the far wall. Instantly, Hendrik turned to chase the pistol, and Zuger kicked out at the back of his knee, landing solidly with the heel of his boot. Hendrik's leg folded under the blow, and he would have gone down, but the wall was there to hold him. He fell against it, pinned for a moment by his crippled leg, and Zuger rolled to his feet. He stabbed with his good left hand, feeling the solid shock of the Griqua's jawbone under his fist. Then again Zuger caught him with his left and heard the gristle in the beaky nose give with the crunch, like chewing on a ripe apple, and the fresh blood from Hendrik's nostrils gave him a fierce joy. He was going to beat this man to a bleeding pulp. "Wait!" Hendrik shouted. "Please, don't hit me again!" The appeal was so frantic, the terror on the Griqua's bloody face so pitiful, that even in his own cold, killing anger, Zuger checked. He stepped back and lowered his hands, and the Griqua hurled the empty shotgun at Zuger's face. It was completely unexpected. Zuger was off guard, and even as he started to duck, Zuger knew it was too late, and he hated himself for a fool. It felt as though somebody had slammed a door behind Zuger's eyes, and his vision was suddenly narrowed and dimmed with blood. He hurled himself forward and dived again for the revolver. He got a hand on the barrel, and as he touched it, the full weight of Hendrik's charging body crashed into his back, driving him into a heap against the door jamb. But he still had a grip on the pistol barrel, and he struck out blindly, using it like a club. He felt the steel butt sock into flesh, and he hit again and again, some of the blows dying in the air, others thudding into the floor, but others cracking against bone. He was sobbing and panting, blinded by his own blood, and for seconds he did not realize that Hendrik no longer clutched and tore at him. Zuger shrank back against the wall and wiped the blood from his eyes. Then he peered like an old man through the red film. Hendrik was beside him. He was on his back, his arms flung wide as a crucifix, and the blood snored and bubbled from his nostrils. He lay very still, his breathing the only sign of life.